White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. This is the webmaster. Instead of a song to start off the show, I'm going to play a clip from the local public radio. It's a funny clip about behind the scenes of being with the police and also behind the scenes of Hollywood.
Chat with the great novelist Richard Price.
Now, when we spoke to him, I asked him, but you've ended up making quite a career writing, especially about the police. You're known for this guy who can write about the police really well. You've spent a lot of time with police, right?
I'd never met a cop before I was like 35. I had no reason to. And I just got addicted to what you can see in the, from the back of a police car and where you could go, where you could never go in your normal life. And because I had written one or two movies, the first time I was hanging out with cops, I was in awe of these guys. I mean, you know, non-judgmentally, you know, you deal with life and death every day. And they would look at me and they go, I want to ask you something, Price. Do you call him Bob, Bobby, or Mr. De Niro? And, you know, was in a cop car and all the cops are drunk on Tullamore Dew, you know, God have mercy on their souls. And they pull up to this real bad housing project and they're not supposed to show up at after 10 o'clock because that's when they knock off to drink. But they got nice and hammered and they went out at 11 o'clock and all the drug crews know when these cops go on vacations. They know when their kids are getting bar mitzvahed. They know when they're taking promotion.
Wait a minute. The drug dealers know when the cop's kid is getting bar mitzvahed?
If they're Jewish, yeah. So they show up at midnight or 11 o'clock and the gangs are just standing there outraged. You're not supposed to be here. And all of a sudden, the guys go, oh, they can still arrest us. You know, it's not like not fair. So, so they start like running away and these cops get out of the car and they're chasing. And some of these guys are like gazelles. They're 18 years old. They're 6'2", yeah. Legs up to their ears. You know, and these cops are like 200 pounds and, you know, the snot's flying and they're going after them. And I'm sitting in the back of the car and whoever didn't run is starting to circle the car like this, you know, with the arms folded, looking at me, wondering if they can chop me up and sell me for parts. So all of a sudden I think the best thing I can do is get out of the car and start running after the cops. So here's the deal. The kids are running and they come to like a slope that is a steep slope down. And the kid goes like flying in slow motion to the bottom of the slope. The cop comes slobbering, pinwheeling with his gun out over the slope. And here comes the writer with his notepad, you know, scared to death. And all of a sudden the cop comes down and he's wheezing. He's got asthma spray. He's got an oxygen mask and a tank. And I said, did you get him, Chris? You know, but I think I had to change my underwear 7 times. Jersey City back to New York that night.
Oh, man. So, Richard, you are perhaps most famous for writing the video for the Michael Jackson song Bad. How did you end up with that job?
Well, here's what happened. The way I heard about it is Michael Jackson wanted to prove to the brothers he was down because he was, like, too Disney. And so his producers, the great Quincy Jones. So Quincy Jones goes to a short, white Italian guy with asthma, Martin Scorsese. And would you help Michael show he's down to the brothers? So he goes to the short, Jewish, asthmatic writer and says, we got to make Michael down. So you got two short, asthmatic, a Jew and an Italian, taking Minnie Mouse and, you know, give him street cred.
In the health world out there, I wanted to read some excerpts from an article from a website called Nautilus. And it was sent from Tom for consideration as far as health is concerned. It is entitled, How the Western Diet Has Derailed Our Evolution. Burgers and fries have nearly killed our ancestral microbiome. And the microbiome, for those that don't know, is basically the gut of your body and the microbes that lie within it. And there's been a discussion recently about how our microbiome is very important to our health, our immune system, and keeping away the diseases such as autoimmune disease, diabetes, asthma, obesity, arthritis, and other diseases of the immune system. It started with the testing of intestinal microbes from the gut of villagers in Africa and those with children in Florence, Italy. The villagers in Africa subsisted on a diet of mostly millet and sorghum. The reason they do take the African children, it seemed to always compare them with the non-African children, usually in Europe, is because whites have advanced technologically to the betterment and detriment of the race, and the Africans, there are still villages in a lot of places, and there would be many more if whites did not go in, corporations did not go in, and governments did not go in, and missionaries do not go in and subvert them from their natural habitat. This is shown in this study of the diet of these two groups. The villagers subsisted on mostly millet and sorghum, very fibrous, unrefined grains. And the Italian children were eating a refined Western diet, including proteins, fats, and simple sugars. The African children were orientated more towards being able to break down the complex plant carbohydrates that we call fiber. The reason they were studying this, the microbes of the microbiome, is that there's growing evidence that the gut flora, or the microbiome, that's what handles our immune system and all our metabolic functions. And if it's corrupted or depleted, it can increase the risk of chronic disease. The scientists found out that the National Institute of Health's 2012 Human Biome Project that was gathering all the microbiomes or gut flora from, quote, healthy people in America was not going to be the example of what the microbiome in a healthy state would have been or would be now. It would just be the, quote, American microbiome. So the researchers then started running around to all the different outlying remote villages all over the world and gathering up as much evidence and samples of the microbiomes of those cultures, because they were starting, with the influx of government corporations, to lose their microbiomes to antibiotics, to vaccines, to hygiene, clean water, and so forth. One of the questions was, where did the diversity of the microbiomes come from? Humans cannot digest soluble fiber, according to this article, so we enlist microbes to dismantle it for us. And these microbes are twice as much, or twice as many in the African children as the Italian children. And what they do is they produce fermentation byproducts, short-chain fatty acids, and twice as much as the Italian children. So this indicated that fiber, which is a raw material that's fermented by our microbes, was somehow boosting the diversity in the African children in the traditional culture. So what they did was they fed mice plenty of fiber, and the microbes that specialized in breaking it down grew exponentially, and the ecosystem became more diverse. But then they switched over and fed these mice a fiber-poor, sugary, Western-like diet, and that diversity of the microbiome plummeted. But these losses weren't permanent, because even after weeks on the junk food diet, the mice, their microbial diversity, their gut flora would mostly recover if it began consuming fiber again. And that was good news. But then we saw what happened when they fed pregnant mice a no-fiber diet. The temporary depletions became permanent losses, because during the diet, it had triggered the extinction of some of the microbes. What happens through the birth canal, the babies of animals or humans They pick up the mother's microbes, which is like a starter culture for the child's own community of microbes. But the baby mice born to mice on the American-type diets that had no fiber, lots of sugar, they failed to acquire all the microbes that their mother had. Entire groups of bacteria were just forever lost. Then those second-generation mice were put on a fiber-rich diet. Their microbes failed to recover. The mice couldn't regrow what they had never inherited. And then when these second-generation animals went on a fiberless diet in turn, then their offspring inherited even fewer microbes. And this compounded down the generations. And this is what they suspect is happening to humans, that we are not going to get back a lot of these microbes. And scientists are still trying to figure out which microbes are good, which ones are harmful. But it seems to me that microbes are not good or bad. They are just, they have specific jobs and they can be helpful or harmful depending on how they are applied. And that people that have lived on the farm and exposed to things like hepatitis A, fecal-oral infections, parasites, environments that resemble these remote villages have a lower risk of Western afflictions, particularly things like hay fever, asthma, and certain autoimmune disorders. So even though we don't want to go back to the time before there are any modern medicine, there is a way to balance the good and the dangerous microbes. Now, the fiber would be things such as, in the diet, would be things like nuts, whole grains, certain fruits like berries, and vegetables. Now, vegetables would also include things that are root vegetables and not just greens. Things, root vegetables, potatoes, yams, sweet potatoes, parsnips, rutabaga, turnips, taro root, Jerusalem artichoke. Those are just some. So soluble fiber, which is the fiber we're talking about here, if you dump a load of it into a community of microbes, those that specialize in fermenting it and breaking it down, those microbes will bloom. And then they're going to start churning out these acids like butyrate, which is like an aged cheese, and acetate, which gives vinegar the sharpness. And these acids are what the scientists believe are the mechanisms by which this fiber prevents disease. They go through into the circulation and stimulate the anti-inflammatory part of the immune system, the cells that help you not attack tree pollen. So it helps prevent allergies and other inflammatory diseases. And this effect, this calming effect, it can reach as far as the bone marrow and lungs. And in a recent Nature of Medicine study, it showed the acids reduce the animal's vulnerability to asthma. So what we have in our gut is a drug factory, unsupervised drug factory. Now, how do we tend to that drug factory to do what modern medicines have taken over to do for us? What will happen if we don't eat this fiber? What is the mechanism that causes the disease to set in? Well, in a short summary, you have a mucus lining in your gut. It is thick enough to prevent things getting through to the bloodstream that should not, things that you've eaten. And when you eat a fatty diet, a Western diet, lacking in fiber, it causes these microbes to devour the mucus lining because they start cannibalizing it, getting out of control. And thus, that's where you hear the term leaky gut, where the mucus lining has become so degraded and eaten by the microbes that are not getting what they need to survive. And you can see this stuff as a toxin. And you can see it right after people eat a fast food meal. It increases in the bloodstream. And the immune system responds as if under threat. And then it becomes a chronic inflammation. Now, we need inflammation to combat diseases and infections, tissue repair. But chronic inflammation is what causes these degenerative diseases. Now, besides eating fiber, what else can we do to increase the microbiome? Places such as households with lots of siblings, homes with dogs, animals of any type, working on a farm, having a garden, even potted garden on the balcony where you put your hands in the dirt does not have to be a farm. These are seem to protect against allergies, asthma, and some autoimmune diseases, and even some cancers. This is also something you may have heard in the news called the hygiene hypothesis. It's all tied in to our microbes in the gut. Now, every article that I read, there is something about race in it. In this particular article, they did try on some Colombians last year that when they gave people of primarily, quote, Native American ancestry, and they gave them European or African H. pylori strains, their risk of gastric cancer increased dramatically. The bugs did not match the, quote, native genotype, end quote, or race is another word for native genotype, and that mismatch increased the risk of malignancy. This is called, quote, the family heirloom problem. Some fraction of our microbes may be uniquely adapted to our particular genetic quirks, i.e., race. That's what I say. To our particular branch of the human family. When they're lost, there may not be any way to recover these microbes. But we can boost our fiber intake to make a healthier community of microbes and put ourselves closer to the earth, animals. If you can't own animals, you can certainly go to dog parks and interact with the animals there. Friends, families that people know that have animals and interact with those animals on a regular basis. Petting zoos, places where you can interact with farm animals. There are several places in Washington, D.C. that have this national park that has animals living on it. Growing a garden and making your own bread. Surprisingly, you could take something as simple as making sourdough bread with the yeast starter. The starter culture of sourdough can also be a way to increase the gut diversity. The scientists that did this experiment in their own family ended up increasing their microbial diversity by 50%. An adjunct to the microbiome is information about water, hydration. And I thought I'd just give a quick overview of, this is a Dr. Mercola. Some people may have heard of him. He has a website, mercola.com. He's written lots of books. He has some very good information. One in particular would be an adjunct to the fiber. Along with fiber, you must drink. You cannot suddenly increase your fiber content and not increase your water or there will be problems. So we'll go with enough said there. Water. 2/3 of our body is made up of water. Our cells, organs, muscles, and our brain are approximately 70% water. This water in our body is the main delivery system for nutrients and oxygen and waste removal. If you do not have enough water to flush away your toxic waste that your body accrues every day, it will damage your body. Water aids in energy production and keeps joints lubricated. Going without food, you can last several weeks, but without water, a few days you'll be dead. So, when anyone wants to know what one thing they can do to increase their health, it would be to drink water and eliminate any other source of drink. Now, the right type of water and how much water. Let's start with how much water. Well, unless you're taking a multivitamin with B2, that'd be riboflavin, your urine should be a light color yellow. The B vitamins can turn it darker. So you'd have to look at on a day that you do not take your vitamins, you will see if your urine is dark or light. So when people need something to cure fatigue or chapped lips, just think of suggesting water. That's usually one of the two of the signs of dehydration. You can also have high blood pressure, headaches, dry, flaky skin, frequent urinary tract infection and kidney stones, and digestive disturbances such as heartburn and constipation if you do not drink enough water. Those are some symptoms. A lot of people drink things other than water, such as sodas. The artificial sweeteners are probably the worst part of the sodas. Aspartame in particular causes formaldehyde to build up in your body's tissues, even though the studies say it's safe. But 90% of these studies were funded by the food and beverage industry. Not all waters are equal. The Environmental Working Group found 38 low-level contaminants in bottled water. Caffeine, Tylenol, nitrate, industrial chemicals, arsenic, and bacteria were all detected. The bottle also, plastic water bottles contain BPA and phthalates. Those mimic hormones in your body. If you are going to drink water, only drink it from glass bottles. And they do have companies that do sell glass water bottles. To obtain water that is better for you than bottled water, there is tap water, but better than tap water would be a water filtration system. It can either be a reverse osmosis filter. It removes about 80% of fluoride and most of the other contaminants, but it's better not to have fluoride in the water in the first place. So you could go to water distillers, but they don't have any of the beneficial minerals, and it's not good to drink distilled water because you're depleting your body of minerals. Water filtration systems, there's pros and cons to each different type. I personally get water from a spring water company that has up in the Palomar Mountains actual spring, not just called spring water. It's actually from a spring, and it has the, you know, the minerals in the natural spring water. Use it for cooking and for drinking, and I was even watering my plants with it, and I had plants that actually had no soil. They'd outgrown their pot, and to keep them alive until I could repot them, I tried the water from the spring water, and they stayed alive and actually looked better than when they were full of soil. By using the spring water, they were getting all the minerals that they needed to survive for a short period of time. They couldn't do it long term. There is a link to find a spring to locate one by you. You can go to findaspring.com, and you put in what area you live in, and it will tell you the closest spring that is near you. There are some that are springs that you can just go to and get your own water. And then you can also look up local water supply people that actually have a spring. And as this website says, you should test all spring water that you get yourself that is not through a company that monitors the water. You should test it all first before you drink it. And there are many ways to do that you can find online. But that's a great resource to finding a spring. There's also companies that supply water from an actual spring. You can research those in your local communities also. And I think that's the best way to get your water for drinking and cooking. When you do find a source of good, clean water, there is a way to restructure the water. It is called structured water. It's a little bit different than what we typically drink as water. It has a different chemical structure. It's not H2O, but H2O2. It's the water that is within our cells, and it occurs in many natural springs. That's another reason to get water, spring water as your source. According to Dr. McCullough's book, it can hold energy, much like a battery, and can deliver energy too, and may provide the energy for the electronegativity of the cells, which empowers them to perform all their biological functions. You can see how this works by looking at how an infusion of rainwater can affect a lawn. If you've ever had a lawn, you know that rainwater is superior to tap water sprinkled on the lawn, related to the fact that rainwater is structured and tap water is not. Now, in writing the book, Dr. McCullough interviewed a Dr. Gerald Pollack. He's an international leader in the field of water research, a professor of bioengineering at University of Washington. Dr. Pollack hypothesizes this compactness makes structured water better suited to penetrate our cell walls. It can get through smaller holes than a larger, more typical water molecule can. And it can deliver hydration more effectively than regular water. Should you drink structured water? Well, Dr. McCullough says that they took structured water to grow their sprouts in their offices and noticed a 30 to 40% increase in sprout harvest compared to plain filtered water feeding or watering the plants. According to the science in Dr. Pollack's two books, structured water is the type of water many of our ancestors drank. Ways to add structure to your water. One, you can take fresh fruits and vegetables. They are loaded with structured water, but tend to lose it once they are cooked or heated. So eating or juicing raw fruits and vegetables is a way to add structured water to your diet. Spring water from deep sources, such as spring water, is another good source. The deeper the spring, the better, as pressure is what structures the water. The mineral content of spring water also helps build structure. Chilling the water. Cooling it to about 39 degrees Fahrenheit adds some structure to it, though the molecules won't be as compact as spring water. Even better, drink chilled spring water. You can vortex the water. Vortex water was based on observations from a 19th century Austrian naturalist, Victor Schauberger. He found the circular motion of vortexes adds structure and oxygen to water. Think of waves curling in on themselves and the flow of rivers and streams and the eddies contained within them. The swirling movement of water is also a key means of purification. Other experts now believe that this motion gives the water molecules a tighter, more ordered structure. This may be one reason why swimming in flowing bodies of water, such as the ocean or mountain streams, is so revitalizing. You can now buy a vortexing machine that can transform your filtered water into structured H2O2. So the summary is on water. Stop drinking sodas, diet sodas, sports drinks, and enhanced water, and replace them with pure, clean water. You'll save money in the long run and have better health. If you need variety in your hydration, choose from organic tea and coffee, raw vegetable juices, and fresh coconut water. And the last tip will be eat more vegetables. By eating more vegetables and healthy fats in your diets, you do crowd out processed foods, sugars, and grains that contribute to insulin and leptin resistance. It's crucial for improving your health. Sodium is often blamed for hypertension, but we're now beginning to see that hypertension is caused not simply by the high level of sodium, but by a combination of too much sodium and too little potassium. Your body needs potassium not only to help regulate blood pressure, but to maintain proper pH levels in your body fluids. Our ancestors got about 11,000 milligrams of potassium a day and 700 milligrams of sodium. But in today's diet, the potassium consumption averages about 2,500 milligrams and sodium at 4,000, which is way out of balance. A 16-to-1% ratio is difficult to achieve, but consuming 5 times more potassium than sodium is very effortless when you replace processed foods with vegetables. Those at greatest risk for cardiovascular disease were not those that just had too much sodium. It's those people who got too much sodium combined with too little potassium. Fresh vegetables are very high in potassium. 1 cup of avocado gives you 874 milligrams of potassium. Spinach is about the same. Broccoli, 505 milligrams per cup. Organic vegetables is very important to do your best to locate. But if you cannot obtain organics, any vegetable is better than no vegetable. You need to wash them thoroughly and remove the peels and cores if possible to minimize exposure to pesticides. If you cannot find organic vegetables, you can rinse the non-organic vegetables in a sink full of water with 4 to 8 ounces of distilled vinegar for about 30 minutes. It will not remove all pesticides, because some of them are inside the cells of the plants. The best way to store fresh produce is to squeeze as much air as you can out of the bag that holds the vegetables and seal them. It should look as if it's been vacuum packed. ethylene gas after they're harvested that is produced. Accelerates ripening, aging, and rotting. But also another reason to eat raw vegetables is that raw vegetables store the sun's energy in the form of biophotons. In Dr. McCullough's book, he lists that biophotons are a very low frequency emission of light, known as an ultra weak photon emission. Every living organism, including plants, animals, and humans, emits biophotons from its cells. It is thought that the higher the level of light energy a cell emits, the greater its vitality. Cooking food can dramatically weaken this biophoton in a food. That does not mean you cannot heat food. When you cook it at very low temperatures, below 118 degrees, so that the nutrients in the food aren't damaged, and very lightly sauteing them. Juicing kills two birds with one stone. You'll get more nutrients from your vegetables, and it will increase how many vegetables you're eating in your diet, and is also an excellent source of structured water. Another great way to eat more vegetables is to ferment vegetables. Fermented food is one of the simplest and least expensive strategies to increase gut bacteria. Cultured foods such as yogurt, some cheeses, and sauerkraut are good sources of natural healthy bacteria, provided they are not pasteurized. If you're not used to eating fermented vegetables, you should start slowly so that your body can become accustomed to it. Fermented vegetables are best consumed as a condiment rather than eaten by themselves. A couple of tablespoons a day of fermented vegetables as a condiment with your meal is the best way to eat them. And the last way to get a lot of extra vegetables into your diet is to eat sprouts. You can grow your own, you can buy them at the store, but sprouts are one of the most nutrient-packed foods you can eat. They have from 10 to 30 times the nutritional content of even the organic vegetables grown in your own garden. The most nutrient-dense sprouts are sunflower and pea sprouts. Now we've covered the microbiome, water, and vegetables. Three things not hard to implement and not expensive to do. These are three things you can introduce into your daily routine that can increase your health and lower your risk for chronic diseases. And to end the show, here's a short interview with a Wall Street banker who is backing Bernie Sanders, and I thought this is a pretty good interview of what's going on, that not all Wall Street bankers are in the pocket of Wall Street.
At this point in the presidential campaign, it's estimated that Hillary Clinton has nearly $2 million in her war chest raised from bankers and stockbrokers in the securities industry. That's about $2 million for Hillary, and for Bernie Sanders, $47,000. Comments like this may explain why.
I think that the business model of Wall Street is fraud. And I think these guys drove us into the worst economic downturn in the modern history of America. I think they're at it again. I believe that when you have so few banks with so much power, you have to not only reestablish Glass-Steagall, but you got to break them up. That is not Hillary Clinton's position.
Glass-Steagall is that Depression-era reform that separated commercial banks from investment firms. President Bill Clinton ended it, and part of the money going into Hillary's campaign may be due to a suspicion that despite her talk of more bank regulations, she may just continue the hands-off policies of her husband. But Bernie Sanders doesn't project a lot of wiggle room on his views of banks. Break up the too-big-to-fail banks, he says, and bring back Glass-Steagall just for starters. This doesn't bother 30-year Wall Street veteran Paul Ryan, a partner at the investment firm Hayfield Financial. Ryan, the banker, is a Sanders supporter and contributor who insists that what Sanders says is no different than the advice he's been giving clients for years on how to avoid the complex, corrupt, and impenetrable mess Ryan believes Wall Street long ago became.
The whole understanding of Wall Street I have comes from Judge Brandeis. You know, sunlight is the greatest of disinfectants. Something we seem to have forgotten, you know, Wall Street has gotten dark and complex, in the last, 50 years, let's call it. There's been a disintermediation of the banks. Everything that was clear and understood, you know, we've now murked up. There's been a trend of money going private, all the private equity funds. You know, that's just a exercise in getting darker and darker. Less is known about what's happening, and it's conscious. Throw on top of it complexity, which I think is the great, more than size, complexity is the problem. You know, and I like the call to Glass-Steagall separates things and makes things less complex. When you mix, you know, the investment bank and the shadow economy with the commercial bank, that's a real complicated thing. I dare say, you know, and I'm reasonably educated and went to law school, majored in economics, worked in a bank. I'm hard pressed to know what Goldman Sachs actually does or Citibank. And I didn't fall off a turnip truck, and I just can't figure out what they're doing right now. So, you know, Bernie Sanders, you know, swinging the meat axe, going, hey, let's just break it all up. That's not the gradualism that Hillary's saying right now, which is, unfortunately, you know, she's in bed with these guys, and I don't think she's going to really make the changes, not with her donor base, that really need to happen. So.
And you would get rid of all the too-big-to-fail banks like Goldman and Citibank?
Yeah, I would separate them up because they're too complicated to understand. And, you know, there's some bright guys in, you know, when you look at 2006 and 2008, where I was, you know, watching from the sidelines as that unfolded, nobody knew what the hell what was going on. And when you see things like AIG and some of these institutions, they're just so complicated. And it's kind of the corollary to Occam's razor. You know, that explanation, which is most simplest, tends to be most true. I think that the corollary, at least in the financial world, is that which is most complex is probably fraudulent. And,
really?
and I think that when you start to look at it, something happens in the details. And even if you disclose everything per Justice Brandeis, if it's so complicated, no one knows what's going on. And I think we've gotten to a point where, you know, even in the age of computers and all that, it's just too complicated to understand. And you've got to just break it back. The human mind isn't ready to deal with this level of complexity.
Now, did you come to this because Sanders convinced you or was persuasive on this? Or did he have a message that suddenly resonated with things you were already thinking?
Well, I think it's the message resonated with what I'm thinking. You know, my BS detector is pretty hard with politicians. You know, I had a front row seat working in a couple hedge funds, watching the hands out from the politicians. I'm an upstate boy. You know, all of this, you know, complexity down here in New York, you know, just, you know, it wasn't my style.
The last really radical president that we had wasn't elected. He got in there because McKinley was assassinated, Teddy Roosevelt. And if he'd run on the program that he enacted in that first term, he would never have been elected.
Yeah.
Americans don't like radicals.
Yeah. Well, I do. but I think, you know, what America likes and what America needs, you know, maybe two different things. And, you know, I would like to see him run hard. I would think that a lot of people, though, you know, there's a lot of voices of discontent. You know, I mean, of course, mind you, you know, at any given time, 80% of the country is not satisfied in the direction, and that's been the only constant over about the last 50 years.
Right.
So a lot of people are discontent, but I think the voice goes is that the American dream in many respects is dead. You know, I think that's a big lie that's foisted off on a lot of people. I don't think the escalator works nearly as well as it should. I came naively to Wall Street thinking I could help. Local Buffalo boy wants to help, you know, small businesses do well. And I just realized that my Wall Street education, you know, I got to watch what happened since 1987 through now. I got to see, you know, a institution like Barclays, where I'd started, turn into, you know, it was just the start of, you know, the movement that in 1996 with Graham Bletchley, I think it is, you know, the basically the Clinton overthrowing of, you know, Glass-Steagall. And, you know, I saw all that stuff start to change. I'd gone to law school. I get out of law school. I go work for a hedge fund. But then got the front row seat on where speculation fit. And it became speculation much more than the formation of capital for businesses, which got really annoying to me. And you know, I just saw that money could be formed for, you know, cockamamie schemes if it was tax arbitrages or whatever they were going to do that didn't have much productive use.
Paul Ryan, a partner at Hayfield Financial, thanks so much.
Thanks.